organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
And you say Shy City. Shy City, Shy City.
I'm coming home again. Do you think about me now and then?
Yeah.
Do you think about me now and then? Cause I'm coming home again.
7 minutes after the hour of five, yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, will once again taking you home from far away in the Drive Home at 5. As my hands are spread across America from the heartland, Chi-Town, a.k.a. Chi-Rack, a.k.a. Chicago, from our sister station, WLS, where the program director, Peter Bolger, and the morning show duo of Big John Howell and Rambling Ray Stevens have rolled out the red carpet for me because I've come into town with my girlfriend, Nancy Regula, for the premiere in Chicago of the Guardian Angel / Curtis Sliwa documentary that we had previewed at WABC a few months ago called Vigilante. And it's right on time in Chi-Town because this is the city, as you all know, that has been labeled and rightfully has earned the title of the most violent city in America. But upon landing at O'Hara Airport last night, it was great as I was coming into the downtown area to notice that the local chapter of the Guardian Angels in Chicago were out putting their boots to the ground as they were chasing after this enemy of society, a rapist who had kidnapped a 13-year-old girl in a predominantly Hispanic-speaking community called Little Village. There are like three of them here, Humboldt Park, Pilsen, and Little Village. And she was viciously raped and then discarded into a nearby alley. And the Guardian Angels were hot on the suspect's path, trying to get information from a community that generally would not cooperate with law enforcement because they would anticipate that the next step for them would be to be taken out in a daisy chain perp walk by ICE, Limigre, Immigration and Naturalization Service. And then the next stop would be either Mexico, Honduras, Guatemala, or El Salvador. And hopefully we'll resolve this crime and aid and abet the efforts of the Chicago Police Department to take this enemy of society off the streets. But as we were coming into the downtown, it's also an area here in Chicago that has suffered, as we suffered years ago from 1979 to 1992, as we were in the grips of police corruption, political corruption, gangbangers, Uzi-toting, dope-sucking, psychopathic killing machines controlling much of the activity in the streets of our city in New York as they do now in Chicago. And it's not just any longer in the poor and impoverished communities or in the public housing projects where there has always been a systemic problem because of the romanticization and the glorification of gangs. Remember, this was the city where Al Capone, Scarface, came to in establishing himself as the capo di tutti, the head of all organized crime. In Brooklyn, on Taffy Place, he couldn't survive. On the boardwalk of Coney Island, he got sliced in a knife fight. That's how he earned the nickname Scarface. And he went and saw sanctuary here in Chicago and was influenced by his uncle, who was controlling the South Side criminal activity. And eventually, they were able to overcome the Irish and the Polish and dominate all organized crime during the era of Prohibition. In fact, it was Al Capone who developed what we now all know as the drive-by shooting. All of that evolved in Chicago, and they've had a gang problem ever since. But they've also had a system that has been poisoned to the core. And Rahm Emanuel, as its mayor, is the perfect poster child for term limits. In fact, Rahm Emanuel is running for a third term. Remember, he was the chief of staff in the beginning of the Barack Obama presidential administration. He had been a congressman before that, born in Israel, and then was moved over by his parents to Chicago. He's not really a Chicagoan at heart, but he has certainly ingrained himself into the corruptive Democratic political machine that has controlled Chicago for years. Except this year he has a challenger, and it's someone that some of you know, both in New Jersey and New York. In fact, Gary McCarthy originally was number four in the NYPD back when Raymond Kelly was the police commissioner. He was the guy that you went to at One Police Plaza to analyze all the analytics. That was his expertise. And I remember sitting down with Gary McCarthy in the Irish Riviera in Rockland County, Pearl River, and the guy knows his stuff. He knows police work. And as a result of that, he was put on loan to the missing in action mayor in Newark, who was never there. Remember Cory Booker before he became the U.S. Senator. And he actually was able to make some improvements into the Newark Police Department. But it was Cory Booker who slashed their personnel, and it made a tough job that much tougher. But because he had sort of indicated to the rest of the country that he was not only a good mind when it came to analyzing police analytics, but also in implementing and motivating men and women who were busting their shoes in the streets of New York and Newark, he was drafted by Rahm Emanuel to come into Chicago and try to curb the growing crime problem. And even though the crime did not go down, because there were so many factors contributing to it, in the 4 years that Gary McCarthy was the police superintendent in Chicago, major changes were made in the department. His replacement, Eddie Johnson, who is now the superintendent, has just, as a political appointee, the crime is just totally off the hook. Anarchy prevails in so many communities. As a result of that, Gary McCarthy is going to be running and challenging Rahm Emanuel to become the next mayor of the city of Chicago. And this is a blood feud. This is a vendetta. This is similar to what we see in New York State between Andrew Evilized Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, and Comrade Bill de Blasio, your mayor, not mine. I didn't elect him. The part-time mayor, the dope from Park Slope, because they have such personal animus towards one another. But Gary McCarthy doesn't have that animus towards me on this visit. In fact, this is what he had to say before I set foot in the terra firma of Chicago.
It's funny. A lot of personalities, when you get to know them in person, are different than what you hear on the radio or see on TV. And Curtis is a good guy. He has a shtick, if you will. But he's dedicated to what he's doing, which is trying to make a difference. So, you know, he and I have been pretty friendly for a long time. I mean, we did some work together, and anybody who wants to do the right thing for Chicago is going to have a seat at my table, whether you're a friend or foe.
Now, let's hope it's not the Last Supper. I'll be out of here before Good Friday. In fact, I'll be back with all of you on the 17th floor of Madison Square Garden tomorrow. But it's good to see that Gary McCarthy understands that he has to have a partnership with not just the Guardian Angels, but with other efforts of people who want to scrape the barnacles off their backside, get their rear in gear, and fight back. The problem here in Chicago is the systemic gang activity. They've been lionized, the gang leaders. They're on the front pages of the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times. They're featured on the newscast as if they were visiting dignitaries from Red China, Russia, or Israel itself. They're given that kind of status and notoriety, even though they end up doing triple life without parole in the biggest walled prison in America in Joliet nearby in Illinois or in Statesville down south. They have a grip on the black and Hispanic community, as did Shorty Pablo Guzman, who did a lot of his drug dealing in Pilsen in the Hispanic-speaking areas of Chicago. So hopefully tonight, as we roll out this documentary, Vigilante, it will empower people to take back the streets, because Barack Obama didn't do it. As you know, he was the community organizer from the South Side. And in his many return appearances in Chicago, along with his wife, Michelle, they were not able to counteract the growing violent crime problem. People were not listening to them. Of course not. The thugs wouldn't listen to the president, Barack Obama, because he was the hometown kid or because his complexion was his protection. Al Slim Shady Sharpton, who's out in Sacramento stirring ferment against the police officers there, he claimed he was going to move to Chicago. He was going to resolve the crisis. Never did. He sold wolf tickets. And even President Donald Trump, who has his signature hotel downtown right near the Chicago River. You can't miss it. With a big Trump sign, said that if he became president, he would send in a squadron, a phalanx of alcohol, tobacco, firearm agents, FBI agents, and they would crack down on the violent crime committed by the gangs. They're still waiting here in Chi-Town. So that's why it is so incumbent that people actually get motivated by an organization like the Guardian Angels that for 39 years has preached self-help throughout the world. We're in 13 countries, 130 cities, and we're prepared to teach more people how to thump their thugs in the mean, tough streets of what Spike Lee recently indicated was Chi-Rack in terms of his movie. That's right. There are more casualties in Chicago, more shootings in Chicago than there were in the waning days of our war against all the forces that be in the aftermath of us toppling Saddam Hussein, who was shooting Americans at random. That's why this place is called Chi-Rack, and that's why Curtis Lee was here at our sister station tonight, WLS, to try to pave the way to recover this city as New York recovered years ago.
Curtis Lee, the deepest knowledge of the city.
Maybe the next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 577 WABC.
Big 526 on the drive home at 5. Yours truly, Curtis Lee, broadcasting to all of you from our sister station, WLS in Chicago, which has been infamous for its decrepit and broken down public housing. In fact, when Andrew Evilized Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Facha Prota Cuomo, King Cuomo I, was the chairman of HUD when Bill Clinton was president, and he came into Chicago and he ordered that the high-rises, which were in the worst shape of any I've ever been into, including all the NYCHA projects in New York City, that they have the wrecking ball to them. Robert Taylor Homes, Cabrini Green, Rockwell Gardens, Ida B. Wells, these were the worst. Crime-filled. And the idea was you take those tenants who were living in the high-rise projects and you put them in townhouses. And the townhouses were nice, but it didn't change the nature of the problem because crime has never been more violent. But at least folks had a decent place to live. The question is, what's going to happen with the decrepit, falling apart NYCHA housing projects, which are those high-rises? Well, Cynthia Nixon, who is challenging Cuomo for the Democratic nomination to become the next governor, acknowledged she had never been in a public housing project before, and she was taken on a tour of the Albany projects in Crown Heights. It's a blood project, meaning it's run and controlled by the blood gang, by Eric Adams, the Brooklyn Borough president. And this is what she said upon leaving some of the apartments of the Albany project.
I wasn't prepared for what a health crisis this is. This isn't just a housing crisis. This is a health crisis. And you can feel the unhealthy air. You can feel how unhealthy it is.
And right away, naturally, a lot of the paparazzi and reporters say, hey, Cynthia, you know, the governor, he controls the MTA, the money-taking agency, and we'll talk about that later. He's responsible for the malfeasance in the running of the subways and the buses. But it's your mentor, it's your Medici, Comrade Bill de Blasio, the mayor, who is responsible for the ineptness of NYCHA. And this is what her response was.
When I am the governor, I am sure that the mayor and I will disagree on a whole host of issues, but I can promise you we won't get into this kind of a pissing contest. I think that the bottom line is every branch of government has to step up, and the state, more than anybody, that's where the money is. That's where the fundraising ability is possible. I don't know how Governor Cuomo can have toured NYCHA housing 3 times in the last week and a half and have seen what we've seen and not be putting $1 billion into the budget.
$1 billion she wants put into a budget. Now, let's go to see if we can balance the books. Unlike our federal government, which always raises the debt ceiling, it doesn't have to balance the books. It's going to put us in bankruptcy. And it's not just the Trump administration, but the Obama administration, Bush 43 administration. They just keep raising the debt ceiling. In state government, you can't do that. You must have a balanced budget. They are working on that budget, as corrupt as they are on both sides of the aisle, where they are open for sale to the lobbyists who are there to wine them, dine them, and pocket line them, Democrats and Republicans in Albany. But they already have a impending $4 billion deficit. So you would say, now, wait a second. We already are going to have to cut $4 billion from the general state budget. How are we going to add $1 billion to that, since we have to have a balanced budget? And whereas the forces of Bill de Blasio, the Italian stallion, and Andrew Cuomo, the other Italian stallion, are fighting to see who's going to be the number one Supreme Cuisine in New York State, in reality, even if they were cooperating, even if they weren't the Heckle and Jekyll of local politics, they still collectively could not come up with enough money to fix the decrepit NYCHA projects. The only source of that kind of money is the federal government. People need to know, 90% of all the bills for public housing everywhere in the United States, where I am in Chicago, where you are in New York City or Newark or wherever you are, is paid for by the federal government. So you have to have some kind of a working relationship with Dr. Ben Carson, of which neither Cuomo nor de Blasio have nor want. And obviously all roads lead from the HUD chairman's office, Dr. Carson's, to President Donald Trump. And already both our mayor and governor in New York are at odds with the president. Now, the president is into rebuilding, restructuring, rehabbing. He's the master builder. So if you would actually take a few moments to stroke the president, to sit him down and ask him what he would do to try to fix the NYCHA housing problems, it might do both Cuomo and de Blasio well. But it's not about the NYCHA residents or fixing the NYCHA projects. It's all about who is going to be the Supreme Cuisine. And at this point, neither Cuomo, neither de Blasio, or de Blasio's surrogate, Cynthia, don't call me Nixon, because people will think I'm somehow related to Tricky Dicky Nixon. Neither of the three have any answers to resolve the problem.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel founder Curtis Sliwa.
Really try to help our cause.
WABCRadio.com.
Yeah, it's all going to pot. But whether we like it or not, best I can tell, the world's gone to hell. We're sure going to miss it a lot.
Willie Nelson singing about his beloved marijuana. And if he were in the state of New Jersey performing, he'd realize that with Governor Murphy on board now, it's just a matter of time. At least Murphy thought it would be a slam dunk with both the legislative bodies controlled by the Democrats, both in the Assembly and the State Senate. But he's run into a series of impediments. And whereas it's being debated here in New York State in this upcoming gubernatorial race, and Malloy, the governor in Connecticut, has said it's time for the legalization of the recreational use of marijuana, everyone thought that New Jersey would lead and the rest of the tri-state area would follow. On the line to discuss it right now is Paul Molschein, columnist for the New York Star Ledger. Thanks for joining us again here on the Drive Home at 5, Paul.
Good talking to you.
All right, so apparently Governor Murphy has run into some speed bumps in trying to get legalization of the recreational use of marijuana?
Well, now they're calling it adult use. They were calling it recreational use, and I think they realize that's kind of goofy. It's like you're going to go into the den and play ping pong and bumper pool, you know? So adult use is the new term, and I think the idea being if you can buy vodka and cigarettes, you should be able to buy pot. What Murphy did the other day was actually quite smart. He issued all new guidelines for the medical marijuana, which most people agree with. He opened it really wide open to the point where if you're a senior citizen, say it's $20 for the permit, all those baby boomers out in Leisure Village will be lining up to get their $20 permit, and then they can say, I got a sore back, and they'll be up to 4 ounces of weed a month. So, and he's blowing that all wide open. That'll probably be so successful in terms of the potheads that that the legalization will just be almost an afterthought.
But Paul Molschein, under Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie, the previous governor, he was forced to accept the legalization of medical marijuana. He didn't want it. It was one of the final measures left behind by Daddy Warbucks John Corzine before he exited stage left. He made it such that it was almost impossible to find, almost impossible to qualify for. Would I be correct in that assumption?
Yeah, you know, there was a $200 fee. Now, if it's medicine, they don't tax the other opioids, his little fetish, opioids, you know, they don't tax them. And he said doctors who prescribe it had to put their names on a state registry, which, of course, you're not going to do that because it's federally illegal. And why does a doctor want to take a chance that the feds might crack down on them at some point in the future? He just put as many obstacles as he could. So even the people who really need it for real ailments, as opposed to the general run of potheads, couldn't get it. And, you know, it was all part of his pitch. He thought he really had a tin ear for politics. At the very moment when guys like Ron Paul and Rand Paul were throwing out the whole nanny state view of the world, there was Christie embracing it, you know, the nanny of us all. She was running for the national nanny and talking about silly stuff. He would say that marijuana money is blood money. And you're like, what, did somebody cut their hand or cutting off the bud? I mean, there's blood money. It's not heroin. You know, and it was all part of his posturing that he was the savior of the heroin addicts, which, excuse me, I don't think the government should be saving the heroin addicts either, but I think it should. If you make pot cheaper, more people do pot, less people do heroin.
Well, Paul Mulshine, how do you see this playing out? Because Jersey was in the lead, but New York and Connecticut seem to try to be making up for lost ground. For instance, if Connecticut would have legalized recreational use of marijuana first, people are going to flock there to get their lid, or if it was in New York or any nearby state. It's like when casinos went up. New Jersey, they had the claim to the casinos in Atlantic City, and everyone went there. Once everyone else had casinos, why bother going to AC? So basically, Jersey had better get its rearing gear and be the first, or their Jersey residents will be going somewhere else to score their lid.
Now, what do you think? How long before Connecticut and New York get it? What's your thought?
Well, Governor Malloy has said we need it desperately now because they're facing a budgetary impasse, which means, as you know, like in Jersey, New York, Connecticut, they have to come in with a balanced budget. It isn't like our federal government, which gets to raise the debt ceiling every few weeks. So they're banking on the fact that if you legalize pot for recreational use, you can probably make $1 billion and add that to your state revenue base.
Huh. Yeah, I don't think you could get $1 billion here. In fact, $1 billion's high. I mean, I've heard estimates more like $100 million, $200 million, $300 million. Maybe New York State could get $1 billion.
Well, why that would work out, Paul. Let's say New York and Connecticut are tardy. So here you got all these millennials and hipsters who love their herb in New York. They'll be coming over on the PATH train to Hoboken, Jersey City.
Oh, I see. Right.
You'll have your little reefer cafes, you know, your little tchotchke joints.
Jersey, you're right. If Jersey had it and New York didn't, they'd really be making a killing.
Right, and then look at the...
They'll go the other way. Yeah, you're right.
The other side... Right, the other side, you'd have Philadelphia, everyone coming over from Philadelphia across the Delaware River. Of course, they're not going to stop in Camden. But they'll stop in a nearby town where it's legal... And then all of a sudden, that's additional revenue. So you're going to be getting it both north of you and south of you.
That's true. And maybe that's why they're going so quick on this stuff, because the medicinal, you're not going to get the out-of-staters unless, you know, you can come in and go to a Jersey doctor. But you're right. And I talked with Steve Sweeney, the Senate president, and he's ready to go on this. He went on a tour in Colorado, and he was impressed by how they do it there. So, you know, the only problem is the Black Caucus, and he thinks he can work that out. Ron Rice, senator from Newark, he's like a Marine Vietnam vet and a former cop, and he just doesn't believe in it, and he's a well-respected guy in the legislature. So they have to make some kind of a deal where he feels that Newark isn't shortchanged. Now, I don't know whether he thinks they should have dispensaries in Newark or shouldn't have it. I would think they should, because there's areas in Newark where people drive in from the suburbs to score heroin, those places were really bad. So, you know, you would think maybe you'd want to have some legal competition to that. And if people are, and also if the people out in the suburbs can just go to a dispensary in the suburbs, they're not going to drive into the city.
No, exactly. And off I-80 right into Patterson, which has always been like the epicenter of drug dealing activity. But let me ask you this. Paul Molschein, you fancy yourself as a beer connoisseur. You like to hang out at the gin mills and swap tales with other beer drinkers. How will beer drinkers accept pot smokers into their sort of fraternity?
Well, I mean, you know, everybody has to smoke. It'll be funny, really, because everybody smokes outside the bars, as you know. And I guess you'll see a lot of people out there smoking pot, and I guess nobody's going to mind, you know. It's funny. Actually, a bar I go to, one of the guys, like 58 years old, was out there smoking a joint, and the, you know, the cop sprung out of the bushes and arrested the guy, and he had to go to, you know, he had to make a $2,000 contribution to that stupid Mothers Against Drunk Driving, which I don't know how that's legal, how they can force you to fund a political organization, but... You know, he got in all this trouble. Also, another guy who hangs out at the same bar already got the medicinal card. So even under the Christie conditions, this guy got the card. So, you know, there's already some people who have the cards even under the draconian Christie conditions. But the cops are no longer going to be able to spring out of the bushes because half the time they'll think they got a collar and the guy, oh, here's my card, you know. So that's going to be – oh, it was silly, actually. In Point Pleasant Beach, next to where I live, where they've got the worst bars on the Jersey Shore, they have these giant Guido discos, you know, the real Jersey Shore crowd from the old MTV series.
Oh, yeah, like Belmont.
Even worse. The people you do not want to see in your town, you know, the most obnoxious people on earth. And, you know, it's funny because I've been to Paris. They say they're obnoxious, but at least they're charming, you know, in some ways. They have good wine and food. I mean, you know, the New Jersey Guidos just have nothing going for them. And they've got these mega bars that spew 2,000 drunks into the street on a summer night. And then the borough council the other day votes they're going to keep marijuana out. I mean, what are the potheads going to do? You know, go down on the beach and stare up at the stars? I mean, the difference between the potheads and the drunks is, you know, the drunks are getting in fights and doing all kinds of crazy things, and the potheads generally are kind of, you know, walking around looking for an I Ching to throw or something, you know.
Well, do appreciate that, Paul Molschein, columnist for the New York Star Ledger, beer connoisseur, sir extraordinaire, and soon get used to it. If you're hanging out at a gin mill and you're outside and you're wanting to get a Pabst Blue Ribbon beer, if you're a hipster, a millennial, or old time Ballantine Blast, you're going to have someone standing next to you who's going to be saying, puff, puff, pass, and you're going to have to accept them into your fraternity.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this scene better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
I'm going up the rails on a crazy train. 5:54 on the drive home at 5. Yours truly, Curtis Sliwa. Yeah, I'm Choo Choo Charlie, the engineer, because this train of the MTA, the money-taking agency in our subways, is like just flying off the rails. Between the switch signal and track problems, it is miserable. But the genius that Andrew evilized Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Pruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, tapped in order to fix the system, is the limey blimey from across the pond in London, England, Andy Byford. And he claimed that as soon as he took the job in January, he didn't realize the intense media scrutiny.
I think probably the intensity of the politics, the intensity of the media scrutiny. You know, I've been exposed to this pretty much everywhere I work, but it's particularly intense here.
What? In London, you got Fleet Street. You got like 9 different tabloids. Stop moaning, groaning, and crying. Then he said the outrageous, which was to blame the Ubers for the lack of ridership on the subways.
I mean, the price of gas is a factor, very low gas price. The rise of Uber and Lyft, so there are alternatives. The fact that in some cases economies are slowing down.
So it was understood. He was a dollar short and a day late in getting started in the job. So now he's decided to make up for that, make up for lost time, because he wants to hear from all of you. So he's using the hashtag AskNYCT. And there were a number of people who immediately just jumped his bones. And they said really good things. They said, How come the MTA, the money-taking agencies, they work on so many lines on the weekends, which end up having to be cross-directed or whose service is limited? Why don't they just immediately concentrate the work on one line, get the job done, and then next weekend go to the next line, and then bunny hop to the next line? Now, that makes a lot of sense, but not to the MTA. So I suggested as the alternative to basically just unload on this Andy Byford, who clearly is not ready for prime time, and take advantage of the hashtag that he has, Ask NYCT, and instead of ask, actually do a commentary like I've done. Hey, MTA, money-taking agency, F you. What about the L train? Remember, they want to close the L train down for 2 years in order to reconstruct a tunnel that they claim was hopelessly damaged in the aftermath of Superstorm Sandy. Boy, you talk about finaglers. And hey, how about this? Hey, Andy, do you even know what you're doing? Or MTA, you suck. Where's my Q train today? Oh, that's for you, Brian Mangalucci, your beloved Q train that cost us, what, $6 billion in order to get three stations up and running on the 2nd Avenue line? And then late to work again. Thanks, money-taking agency, the MTA. You suck. So he wants to hear from all of you. Why not do what I've done? Use the hashtag AskNYCT. And let the limey blimey from across the pond know exactly what you think about the subway and bus service in New York City. Andy Byford, because it sucks.